We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello, Panthers fans, Panthers Nation, even the Patriots Nation out there. You might want to tune into this one today. It's your friends, John and Billy. John Ellis, Billy Marshall. We are the new voice of the Carolina Panthers on the Blue Wire Podcasting Network, the Roar. We are the Carolina Panthers affiliate for Blue Wire. We're going to give you two of these bad boys a week, basically talking about anything from the current state of the NFL, the Carolina Panthers in particular. We'll dive back into the history of the team, give you a flavor of what's going on with some of the guys that have come through the door in the past, and also look forward to maybe some other things going on around sports here and there and pop culture. You never know what's going to pop up. But with that said, let's talk to the hero of the show, the man, Billy Marshall. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well, man. Can't complain. Enjoying this summer weather as much as we can get.
We've got a lot to talk about here. So first of all, this is our first podcast. We have come from sort of similar backgrounds, but I guess different backgrounds. We got to know each other a little bit through Twitter and some mutual friends in the football world. Billy, why don't you start? Tell everybody here who you are, what you do, where you're from, and why you're here.
Yeah, thanks again for the introduction. And you know, I've been writing about the Panthers in different outlets for a few years now, mainly focusing on film breakdowns and looking to promote any type of content I can through Twitter and different blogs that I get a part of. But really, the past few years working with the Cat Scratch Reader has really helped me grow as not only a writer, but also it's giving me more avenues as far as, you know, this opportunity, and also in addition to that, just being able to break film down and gain a large Twitter following, especially with Panther fans, has really helped. Not all of them always agree with me, as I'm sure you'll say the same, but it's always a good opportunity to speak about them and kind of break them down, you know, from a macro and micro perspective, and how they kind of operate not only as an organization, but also what they do on the field from a week-to-week standpoint.
Yeah, and we're going to touch on that too. I'm really curious to get your thoughts on the organizational structure right now, because we've talked about that in the past. Once we get past our CAM conversation that the whole world's having right now, we're going to talk about that. We really got to drill into where this team is, where they're heading, and then still some question marks, I think, and in your mind and mine as well. But you can catch him at BillyM_91 on Twitter. Of course, Cat Scratch Reader is where you can find a lot of his work. And if you hit him up on Twitter, I'm telling you, you probably already do if you're listening to this, because he's got a ton of followers. But he's one of the best in the business in terms of just helping you understand what you're not seeing on the film there. So it's good stuff. Billy and I got to know each other a little bit through Twitter. I started my project One Panther Place about a year ago, and I'm from Spartanburg, where training camp has been held for 25 years. Doesn't look like it's going to happen this year, but maybe one next year, hopefully. But we started this project, my brother and I, about a year ago, just as sort of a, hey, what the hell? No profit, no ads, none of that. Just, hey, let's see if we can do what these guys out there are doing. And if we don't make a dime, that's fine. Let's at least prove that we can provide some value to fellow fans out there. And we've got a nice little following there. You know, and made a buck from it, but we're getting there. But my background is journalism. I was a journalism broadcast major. My dad's a disc jockey in Greenville, South Carolina, country music morning show guy. Bill Ellis, how you doing? Thanks for all your support. I'm sort of a radio guy first in my heart, but I got into the sports writing biz with the Greenville News a while back, and I was about 23. Did about 10 years there doing high school, a little bit of college football reporting, and then the newspaper business, decided they didn't need so many people working there, and that's where we end up being freelancers. So the work that Billy has done is commendable, and then his colleagues as well over at SB Nation and other outlets as well. And, like I said, what we're trying to do here is build a bridge between his concepts and his accomplishments from that end and some of the stuff I've done, and put our opinions together in Blender and see what happens. And again, first episode, you never know what you're going to get. We do have something to talk about. Cam Newton obviously goes to New England. That's not necessarily a shock. I think a lot of us saw that as a possibility. Your thoughts on that move and sort of his legacy in Carolina. Were you shocked by him moving to New England?
No, not at all. I think that was in an obvious connection as soon as the offseason began. The Chargers, the Jaguars, the other teams who had interest in quarterbacks or who potentially could have had interest in him, they were going in a different direction. So it made sense that the Patriots would wait until, the end of June to potentially find this bargain at the most important position in probably all of sports. So no, I'm not really surprised that they did it. I really didn't think that they were going to go into a season with Jarrett Stidham. I felt that if they kept it with Stidham and Hoyer, that Hoyer would eventually just take over. But again, the upside with both of those guys isn't really going to take you very far. So I was not very surprised to see the Patriots end up with Newton. I figured if they don't sign Newton, then they probably go sign Kaepernick potentially. But he hasn't played in 3 or 4 years, but Newton is clearly healthy. Just looking at his videos, he looks healthy. I don't want to say he is.
Doug Gottlieb would tell you to kiss his ass.
Yeah, anyway, forgetting about him.
Exactly.
I think this is a great fit for the Patriots. I really do. And it's a very low-cost move. If it doesn't work out, whether it's health or just his overall play, then you're really not on the hook and you're back the same situation next offseason.
I think that's what they do so well, Billy. And we've talked about, where Carolina is with value per position right now, paying McCaffrey, paying Bridgewater, rebuilding on the defense. I mean, you're getting Cam Newton at 31. And there's some question marks. I don't know how many of those are valid, but, no teams out there seem to have a great deal of interest in the guy right now. It's an odd time, it's a pandemic and there's, rehab he's still been going through, and he just got, completed with that because looks like he's passed a physical. So the timing issue really played into this. But back to that point, when you can basically steal a Cam Newton for a year for what, $7 million max, and the burden that takes off the rest of your structure to be able to build around that, whether they want to add some pieces now, whether, I read that if he goes next year off somewhere else, they get that third round pick back they surrendered to the, whatever this fine from the Cincinnati Cammergate thing. So, I mean, they, the compensatory formula works out in their favor again. It's impressive, and I think it speaks to Bill Belichick's, you know, ability to not be flexible. I don't want to patronize Newton like that. I've seen some of that today that, you know, Diana Russini had a tweet that, you know, an AFC East coach has texted me that they're not going to use Newton as a traditional quarterback or something to the effect that he's going to be sort of a wild card. I don't know what the hell that means. Wildcat, wild card. It felt like, you know, somebody trolling somebody. I don't think there's any question he's the starter at this point. Now, if his foot flares up, you know, obviously you can't go in that direction. But I've seen almost no tape of Stidham. I don't know much about the guy. Not enough.
Yeah, he wasn't a very exciting prospect in college. I know the Patriots like to talk him up he was, but they did draft him in the fourth round. And I studied his tape really closely because there was some interest, at least some reports, that Carolina could be interested in him before the draft, and I was not a huge fan.
Yeah, I just don't I don't think you would bring Newton in, even at $7 million, and that's a bargain. And sort of, he's not going to do the Taysom Hill thing, you know, no matter how they think this is going to go. And there's still some legitimate people out there questioning. Even Mark asked me today on his podcast, would you pencil him in as a starter week one? It's like, I'm a Sharpie markering him in. I mean, this is a no-brainer to you. Brian Hoyer, I mean, I've seen that play. I've seen what I can see for him. Not a bad guy, not a bad player. Just, you know, Cam Newton takes you to another level if he's healthy. I'll say this, and I'd like your thoughts on this too. The EP, the Earhart Perkins stuff, you know, the system that Belichick sort of learned from Parcells and sort of evolved into his own, and now McDaniels has his hands on it, you know, basically gives the quarterback a lot of freedom and gives the quarterback a lot of structure, but it also makes things difficult on opposing defenses. It's really more of a simplifying the terminology type of offense, and I'm wondering if that will translate since Newton has been in that system or remnants of it. Do you have any thoughts on that system or what New England does run or any corrections you can make from anything I might have gotten wrong there?
No, I think you're pretty spot on. And I think one big personnel advantage that the Patriots will be getting is David Andrews, their center. I think he missed last year because he had blood clots, unfortunately. So all the reports right now are that he's, you know, healthy and potentially going to be back for them. And, you know, if you remember Newton, especially like in his early years, 2011 to like 15, he really did rely on Ryan Khalil, you know, at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, Cam had his own input and he knew how to read defense. I don't want to take anything away from him, but I think Khalil also helped, especially with the protections. And with the Patriots, that's going to be pretty key as well, because they do rely a lot on, you know, how their protections kind of move on one side or the other. And they don't have like the most like talented offensive line, speaking from like raw talent. Like Shaq Mason's a good player. Mm-hmm. Andrews, again, another good player. Isaiah Wynn was drafted pretty high. He's a solid player, but like they're not like the Cowboys, like where you have like, you know, three or four transcendent talents.
Yeah.
Well, at least the Cowboys of like a few years ago,
they had that. Yeah.
So essentially, like they play really well together. I know they did lose their offensive line coach Scarnecchia, who was probably one of the best offensive line coaches ever. But just looking at their personnel, they don't really have like a huge field stretcher. So I'm expecting them to play a lot of 12 personnel. They did draft two tight ends on day two of the draft. And
where do they? Is it Asiasi they drafted from UCLA? Was that one of them?
Yeah, and then the guy from Virginia Tech. I can't remember his name right now.
I like that Asiasi kid, man. I don't study the tape as much in college. Deshaun Foster had just sent me a message. He's like, "You think you guys are going to take my boy? Because he's a running backs coach out there now." And I said, "I have no idea, but I've seen a little bit of tape, and he can scoop, man."
It's he's pretty solid. I like this tape. And Dalton Keene. He was one of the most athletic tight ends in the draft, and both of them kind of offer that type of flex H-back role where they can do a lot of, they can kind of show their versatility. So, and then the wide receiver core, like I just said, it's not the most exciting group. You know, Sanu, I expect him to be healthy and he should probably look like his former self. And, as far as the receiver they dropped in the first round, Harry, I'm not a huge fan of him, but I do think that he has some similar type traits to DJ Moore, where he can get open in the present himself as a target in the short intermediate areas of the field and take the ball and run after catch.
No.
So, yeah, I think it's the offense kind of works pretty well. And like I said, I think the offense is tailor-made for how Newton played in the beginning of 2018. They obviously don't have a Curtis Samuel, but I do think that they're going to a lot of play action. Yeah, not yet,
Billy. You never know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Get
we'll
their
see.
Wick into our trade bait. You never know.
Yeah, we'll see. So I expect a lot of play action. I expect a lot of RPOs. I expect a lot of moving Newton, putting him in situations where he can use his legs potentially too. I expect a pretty diverse offense from the Patriots, because one thing they do well, and one thing that you and I know they will do well, is they always fit their personnel within their scheme. They don't, they're not married to one scheme, which you see from other teams, and those usually end up in a disaster. So I think you see a lot of flexibility.
You're exactly right, and I think that's what they've done well with their EP system here, is they've taken the rigidity out of the schematics, and they've made it more about the structure and the terminology and the process. It's more about conceptualizing plays and be able to memorizing what you got to memorize and making things easy. Everybody talks about how hard of an offense it's to play in, and I think a lot of that is that they do demand a lot out of these guys, and they do drive them a little harder maybe than some. But from a quarterback's perspective, it looks like it's a good place to land for Cam. I think it gives him an opportunity to, let's face it, it's been the greatest, the cheating stuff you could say notwithstanding, but as far as just consistently winning and being focused on that process single-handedly, it's a great place to go and try to rejuvenate. And if it doesn't work out, it's 1 year spent, you move on, you become the next Ryan Fitzpatrick and travel the world. But it's fascinating, man. That's some great insight. We need to talk a little bit about, and not to get sentimental here, but this kind of marks the closing of the door for Newton. And this will kind of help us close the door on that so we can move forward. Mark had asked me earlier, Mark Schofield over there at, the Pat's Pulpit, we had a podcast earlier today. What was a memory that stands out for me reporting or covering the team or even as a fan before? And I told him, look, Cam, you got 1,000 things you can pick from there. He was an absolute remarkable athlete and transcended the position in a lot of ways. And, he's not perfect. He's got some things he needs to keep working on. But me is that championship game. And I posted this earlier. He had 2 consecutive runs there before he scored that last touchdown that sealed it, where he did the kind of unnecessary dive over the pylon, and just the raw power on the first run, where he's just he's got 3 defenders bearing down, and he's just owning. I think it's Powers, the safety from Arizona. He's dragging him 5 feet up the, 5 yards up the field. He's just superhuman at times. And I'm not trying to use hyperbole here or be a fanboy, but what you saw with him was just basically a Julius Peppers build at quarterback. And I think that's going to take some time to get used to from the fan's eye. As an analyst, I've looked at the Teddy tape and I've got what I got from that. And we'll talk about that later. But just from a physicality standpoint, it's going to be a big adjustment to not see that there after a decade. From thinking back, you've covered this team. What moments or moment stands out to you as far as how you'll think about Cam in Carolina?
Yeah, I think you have to go back to probably the Week 16 game against the Saints 2013 to clinch first playoff berth and eventually the division title, first round bye. there was a lot of talk going into his third year, whether this guy was, the right player for the organization. And I think a lot of us truthers knew it at the time. And I don't think that third season really validated it, but it was still good to see the accomplishment of winning a division and taking the team to their, first playoff berth under his leadership. So that comes up, obviously, 2015. No one can really forget about that. And even as a rookie, I thought he just did a lot of just unworldly things as a quarterback.
He was crazy.
Just throwing deep bombs and all over the field.
It was a bonanza, and, man.
Yeah, I mean, it just crazy. It really hits you, especially, you know, watching the previous years with DeLome and Moore, who are prone to more kind of conservative options. But yeah, I mean, I think there's just all sorts of different games and memories that come to mind. I'm sure we could spend like hours on that, but I think those two kind of really come stand out for me.
Yeah, it's a great pick. I was at that game with my brother and dad. We were in the upper deck, and we were sick for like a week afterwards because it was a monsoon game. We absolutely got drenched. It was one of those games we knew we'd be sick, but it was such a thrill to be there to see, you know, like you said, to see Newton really culminate. You know, he had some moments before that year, the New England Monday night game at the end, but that was sort of the, you know, the stand up to Sean Payton, who had had that team rolling, you know, four or five straight years, taking that division title. It was quite a day there, especially since they had not been to the playoffs since 08. So it's a good call there. That's a great game. Speaking of which, one thing to leave you on when talking about Cam Newton. Schofield asked me this earlier. How does Cam Newton do in cold weather and bad weather? And I started thinking, I looked back and I said, Mark, he hasn't had that many. You look at, and Billy, you correct me if I'm wrong, he's played in three real rain games. That one, New Orleans would be one. The Indianapolis game Monday night in 15 would be another. And then there's a Jacksonville, his first career win back in 11. That was a bit of a downpour. But I just told him I don't think it's going to be a major concern. Yeah, just sort of a sidebar there for you to chew on that, you know, a lot of folks maybe in the Boston area are concerned that Newton might not have some of the makeup it takes to play in cold weather. I just don't feel like it's going to be a huge issue, but we shall see about
that. Yeah, I can't really remember. Obviously, it's a weird it's not a weird question. I don't want to say that.
That was a unique question.
I
had to work to prep for that one. I was like, damn.
No, I mean, just look at the playoff games in 2015 against Seattle and Arizona. Those are pretty cold games.
They were, but they weren't below freezing, and I think that's the criteria I went with here. The below freezing games I've got with Newton is the Minnesota game in 14, which was awful.
That was an abomination, like, by everyone. That wasn't really...
It was terrible. Bridgewater was, you know, I looked at that tape, and I can't get excited about him from that tape, but it is what it is. And then the other one was the Washington game, Monday night 16, right after he popped his shoulder.
Yeah, I was at that game.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Right. Yeah, that was it was very cold that game.
On,
it was like 15 to 20 degrees, like maybe below like 10 degrees wind chill.
I'd forgotten about all these years how cold that night was. And we're, you know, down
so that that counts. He was pretty, yeah, I thought he was really good that game.
He was sharp. I don't have the numbers in front of me. No picks, two touchdowns. The arm looked good. That was right after he tweaked the shoulder when they played San Diego, too. That was the next week after. So, and maybe they should have benched him at that point. Who the fuck knows? But the other cold game was the Cleveland game in 18, which was a disaster. He did not look well there, but his arm was pretty much toast at that point. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. So, you know, that's Cam Newton, guys. You know, he's off to New England. I'll be honest with you. I'm happy for him. Not that he gives a shit about me, but just as a guy who's observed his journey and somebody who has, you know, watched him develop and take, you know, a shit sandwich here and there from the media and just, you know, flips his truck, comes back 2 weeks later, and he's winning a division title. He's a pretty resilient, tough guy, and I think that's what Belichick looks for, and I think he's going to fit that bill, and I'm more than fascinated to see how that AFC shakes out now. I'm like you. I don't know if they quite have what it takes to be one of the top six there, but we shall see. Billy, I want to get your thoughts moving on to something else here. We've got an offense to look at, and it actually is in Carolina, believe it or not. I know this camp talk has been fun, and we're talking about all these great things and all these beautiful concepts with Newton running around and making plays, but we got Teddy Bridgewater. We got Joe Brady. We got Matt Rule. We got a new regime, a whole new approach here, and you're still stuck with some guys, though. I'm not stuck necessarily, but you got some guys in limbo, like a Curtis Samuel. McCaffrey's been locked up. DJ Moore is still very young, but the time will tell with him. And what I wanted to do here was just get your thoughts on the skill players leading off here, starting with Teddy Bridgewater. I've looked at some film. I'll give you some of my thoughts on that in a minute. But what does Teddy bring this team? Does he bring this team any value?
Yeah, I think he does. Value, I think, is a very interesting way to put it. I don't think that, I mean, just look at the quarterback play the past couple of years. And Bridgewater brings competency, and I think that's pretty important. Now, where the Panthers are at their stage in their team building process, they're not at a stage where, you know, by all likelihood, they're not going to be competing for Super Bowl or anything like that. But because the roster just isn't ready. But overall, I think that Bridgewater brings competency. He understands, he's going to know the playbook because he's worked with Brady before. He's going to get players in the right position. He's going to get the ball out of his hands quickly. I think the offensive line is okay, and the skill players are, again, probably above average. So, you know, as far as the quarterback is concerned, he's probably not going to lose you many games, but he's probably not going to win you many games either. Just by his conservative nature, he tends to kind of go through his reads pretty quickly and elect for the safe option, which is checking the ball down. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me if McCaffrey, like, you know, had a career high in catches this year, because I can see Teddy really, you know, choosing that option over
Let me jump in real quick on that, Billy, because I've heard some really smart people, and I this is one area where I think I've got a good handle on it, but I like to get a number of opinions to sort of compare to mine here. What do you think it is with Bridgewater and the deep ball? Do you think he can't? Do you think he just doesn't? Is it a fear thing? Is it a I'm starting to think maybe it's more of a discipline thing. That Peyton gave him a structure. He stayed within it. He didn't compromise it. Peyton pretty much said, look, keep it horizontal. Let's not go too vertical. Let's not get crazy. And let's just manage it. And that's how I take it. I think he's got the ability to push the ball, but I don't see a lot of it on tape.
No, I mean, there were certainly opportunities last year that he turned down, but there was also a lot of opportunities where he did make that throw, and he did opt for the risky option. So, a couple things. The first thing is, I just think that Sean Payton's offense as a whole, it's a lot more horizontal than your typical offense. I mean, even Drew Brees, you know, he's been kind of getting the label that this guy can't go throw deep for years. But I don't. I just think Bridgewater just doesn't really have the arm talent that, yeah, a guy like maybe Cam Newton that we're talking about has. Right. So,
Does a player like Bridgewater, is that a commodity? Is that a valuable skill set, not being vertical but horizontal? Yeah, you know what I'm saying here? Is this something that a Newton probably, that issue probably transcends horizontal vertical passing. It's probably more of a personality, alpha male, money issue. It's something's going on there with Cam. They didn't like, and it didn't align. I don't think.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. Yeah.
Who's ever gonna? But do you think? I keep trying to sell myself on Bridgewater, and I think I've gotten myself on board with the fact that what I do like is he was given an opportunity. He was obviously given, you know, an offense to run. He played within that offense. He did make some key throws situationally, Billy. That, you know, I posted a few of those on All 22. Like, they were backed up in the dome against Tampa. They were only up by 7, and he made this gorgeous 12-yard throw on 3rd and 12 to keep a drive moving. They ended up clinching the game. Little things like that, you know, maybe Newton missed out on lately. I keep thinking they're comparing Bridgewater to the 0-8 Cam Newton, and I don't know if the Panthers or Panthers fans believe that Newton will ever come back around. I wonder if we're overhyping or overselling the Bridgewater skill set.
Well,
not you, just I think a lot of folks in general have had a tendency to say, well, he's 5-0 as a quarterback last year.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
You gotta look deep at how Sean protected him with a lot of the schemes there.
Well, okay, let's not even look at how he did in New Orleans. Let's go back to Minnesota. And even there, his offensive coordinator was Norv Turner. And what does Norv Turner like to do? He likes to push the ball down the field. I know he kind of adapted his scheme for Newton, but before he came to Carolina, his offenses were predominantly known for, yes, you know, taking shots down the field, a lot of kind of vertical elements. And Bridgewater just
again, he didn't pull the trigger. And again, I don't want to take anything away from the guy. I had him, you know, as my quarterback one prospect in 2014, but that is a limitation with his skill set. He does not push the ball down the field. So then you have to kind of create an offense that caters to his skill set, which is a lot of intermediate and short options, but the occasional deep shot. And I think that's sort of what you're going to get. And I mean, the player I think that comes to mind when comparing him, and I don't think he's probably, you know, he doesn't probably have the upside, is Alex Smith. And Alex Smith was competent. Sure. He took two teams to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And he won multiple division titles. And he's been, I would say, a pretty successful quarterback overall. So that's sort of how I see Bridgewater comparing, you know, with...
Yeah. I think what the point I'm trying to hammer home here, and you're on the same page, I think, and you've actually given me some good insights here, too, is that... It's more than just looking at a guy's record from 1 year as a half a starter. The guy hasn't been a full-time starter since 2015. That's the last year Newton won an MVP. And again, you know, we don't want to keep the Newton Bridgewater comparisons are over. There's no sense in going back and relitigating that. So that's that. I'm wondering if Bridgewater puts together what we think he'll put together, which with these weapons could be a pretty consistent, maybe even a borderline Pro Bowl type of number season. You just never know. If he's 75%, 70%, maybe 25, 26 touchdowns, three or four picks. How it is, whether you get elected to the Pro Bowl, whether it's fair or not, right or not, your value inflates immediately. So I'm just trying to think ahead to that. He is definitely a better quarterback than Will Greer, so they've got a viable chance to be competitive.
Well, and again, just one thing I want to push back there. Mitch Trubisky was a Pro Bowler a couple of years ago, so I don't really think that matters too much.
That's sort of my point, is that the Pro Bowl does amplify what is sometimes a very marginal, but a very average talent. And I'm just wondering Carolina's mindset here, and you can't get into their head, if Brady and him are so tight at this point that, hey, if unless he totally craps the bed, and they go 8-8 or 7-9, 6-10. They're just going to steer away from the quarterbacks in the draft and continue to roll with Teddy. I'm wanting to know if that turns into a 9-7, 8-8 purgatory.
Well, and this is a larger question about the direction of the team. Yeah. The Panthers, they don't have a good defense. I don't really think they probably had the worst defense in the NFL, putting it mildly. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised by that statement at all. So, if you potentially win 6 or 7 games, that essentially means that your offense produced at a level that overcame your deficiencies in defense. Yeah. So, yes, he definitely probably will deserve another year if he kind of plays well. But my opinion is that they will be an above-average offense, kind of like in the 12 to 14 range, you know, depending on what metric you're evaluating. And then they're going to be probably a bottom-5 defense. And overall, that probably gets you to... you know, 4 to 6 win team, and that's sort of where sportsbooks have their win total right now. And I think that's a pretty fair outcome. Again, I don't think Bridgewater is bad, but I don't think he's ever going to lift up an offense and make it great. And I mean, you just look at his games last year. His best game was probably the game, his final start against the Bears, and he played really well that game.
Look
at the other starts against, you know, Seattle, Jacksonville. And
yeah, there's not much there. I looked at all that tape, and you've got to really dig deep to find the one or two throws that really stuck out. A lot of it's tunnel screens, quick stuff to Kamara. Yeah. I mean, it's
and the Saints' defense.
A ton of what Sean was doing there, and he's done this with Drew over the years. But I saw kind of the Chicago game because, you know, the pass rush is obviously fierce. From 7-8-man protection, there was a 9-man protection at one point. They had a 1-man route, and they just gave him acres of time to sit back there. And obviously he's got less options to scan, but I'm fascinated by it because I think, you know, he's got a great opportunity to rejuvenate his career from where he's been. But I keep looking back at how long it's been since he's been in this position. And I think it's okay to be a healthy skeptic that, you know, hey, there are some limitations there. And if he can merge and gel and Brady can make this work with, because he obviously has a lot of faith in this guy, and they didn't pay him, you know, $7 million. They gave him a pretty decent chunk of change compared to some other guys out there. I know there's some open.
Yeah, I mean, it's an okay amount, but it's still like pretty average money compared to starting quarterbacks.
I guess so.
I just look at, I'm not a huge Ryan Tannehill fan, but he got like top of the line money. I don't really think there's a huge difference between Tannehill and...
I saw Ryan play in person in Charlotte last year, and I was completely unimpressed. And
yeah,
you know,
I think there's probably not a huge difference between Tannehill and Bridgewater, personally speaking, especially if you look at their career arcs. But yeah, I mean, that's just, I don't really think the money, especially, is a factor with the Panthers because of how much cap space they had. So they can probably, like, they could have afforded to inflate his price tag a little. But anyway, regardless of that.
Would you have preferred for the team, and now if you're in the fan's hat, you put your fan hat on, you're looking at it from a rah-rah perspective, or even from a business perspective, would you prefer them steering away from a Bridgewater and maybe just sticking with something they have already? And I don't want to say Will Grier, you know, but they did invest a third rounder in this guy, and if you're going to try to position yourself for, you know, not being a 7-8 win team, that might have been a better alternative. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think that it's necessarily just, do you want Bridgewater or do you want Grier? I think there's a couple options you can take, and this is what the Dolphins did last year. They didn't really just focus on one option. They gave themselves multiple options at the quarterback position. They bought low on Josh Rosen, and they gave a pretty small contract to Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that's sort of how they rebuilt their entire team.
God, they did such a good job, Billy. They did such a good damn job.
That's sort of what
it's
you
so
can
depressing.
Do. So let's look at a couple like buy low options. You could have potentially bought low on Josh Rosen again. Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston potentially.
Yeah.
He offers certainly, in my opinion, more upside than Bridgewater. I think that's just my opinion. Yeah, that's another option. And I don't know, like, if you wanted like a competent backup type, then you could have looked at potentially Brian Hoyer. I mean, that's one. And there's a few others. I don't want to mention Chase Daniel because he got overpaid, but that's sort of like the quarterback I'm referring to. Because, yeah, I think just where the Panthers are in their rebuild process, and I think that is a rebuild. I don't think anyone can say, you have a first-time head coach, this is not a team that's ready to compete for anything. So that's just my opinion on it. I mean, I don't really think that makes me a hater. I don't think that makes you a hater either.
No, we're not.
That's just kind of where I stand.
We could give a crap if you hate us or not. Just listen to us, because we're going to give you – we're going to be – Billy especially, but we're both going to be very blunt with how we feel about where the team is, without being completely friggin' rude about it. But look, gets me to my next point here. I didn't see Matt Rhule from Baylor being the top guy on their radar for that. And, you know, they can pay him what he wants. It's not a salary cap issue. But he's bringing along his defensive coordinator, whom I respect. He's never called a play in the NFL. It was Brady, for that matter. And, you know, this is all new territory for all of them. I do think from a managerial standpoint here, I just don't understand, after all these years, like we've talked about, how they have not gotten more progressive in that seat. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, if you have to.
Yeah, I think it's my thoughts speak for themselves on that. You don't really need to kind of tell me more.
Let's hear them again.
God, we can do an entire podcast on this. Yeah, I just think that, you know, he's kind of outdone his welcome. He's just made poor decision after poor decision. He's very short-sighted with decision making, and overall, I don't really think there's much upside in keeping him. But that's sort of the route the Panthers have chosen. They've hired some other individuals as part of their front office. They hired a new cap guy from the Steelers who gets good reviews, and then they hired a guy from the Patriots that is also very close to Matt Rhule, and he seems to be a younger guy and more progressive as far as his thinking is concerned. So, yeah, I mean, those are obviously pluses, but overall, I just think that when you have, the guy is still driving the wheel, who's overseen a lot of bad moments for this team, then I just think there really isn't much upside in keeping him. And I think we can go through a list of why, but that's just kind of like my generic thoughts right now.
Well, we'll do a whole pod on that, because we've got a list. Billy and I both do, and mine date back all the way to the Jake Delhomme era. I'm sure yours do as well. I'm not in the business of saying, well, you got to give the guy credit. You know, this is not a credit business. This is an analysis business, and the results have not consistently been there. And you look at his record versus other GMs. You look at some of the decisions that were made. You look at the fact that he was put on hiatus, and you know, it basically came back as a temporary, you know, hire, and he's still here somehow. And none of that really seems like your best opportunity to get the right guy in the door. But maybe Tepper's too, you know, tied up with other business things to really focus on that. Maybe he truly trusts him. That would concern me from that perspective, that if he's putting the keys in his hand to do that. At the end of the day, maybe Matt Rhule has more control than we think. But I don't know, man. I'll be curious to see where that ends up going. I know there's, like I said, there's so many things about Dave Tepper that are going on right now as far as trying to do the soccer stuff, build the headquarters. We talked about this before on my show, my podcast on the other side. First time owners over the last five go at it, you know, whether it's the folks in the Browns, forget their name, the Haslams, the Pegulas, Woody Johnson's kid or whatever. Just the last five times there's been an ownership change where they've had to hire a new head coach, it didn't go so well. And there were some growing pains. And, you know, Tepper may have the secret sauce here, but let's not forget, this is year three for him. He gets credit for the years he's been there. So, you know, I don't want to ball bust the guy, but he seems like a ball buster, and I don't think he's going to lose sleep over taking a little criticism here. He came in and won some goodwill over with a lot of fans. I think that's great. At some point, you know, giving Matt Rhule that kind of contract and stressing patience and patience and patience, and in a league that doesn't really require that many years to get it right, you know, this thing better turn around for a lot of people quickly, or else you're just going to have a lot of apathy out there. And after losing your franchise quarterback, you know, that's going to be a tall hill to climb if you care about ticket sales or whatever. But, you know, maybe he gives zero shits about that. Who knows, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to winning. It doesn't really come down to what he does, you know, with the logo at the midfield.
Nothing.
If he's speaking to fans before the game, just put a product out there and on the field that wins games. And right now, this team is most likely not going to win next year. They have an opportunity to build on it. I think Matt Rhule was a good hire. He was certainly at the top of my list between him, Bieniemy, and I wasn't a huge McDaniels fan because of, you know, some of the things that
it
he did
go
in his
well
first
in Denver,
tenure.
Man. There were some relationships he burned in Denver I didn't like. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, so obviously I think Rhule is a pretty good hire as far as, you know, rebuilding a team, and he certainly has the track record of he did it at Baylor and he did it at Temple. So
that track record thing, now I hear that a lot. You feel that's a translatable to the next football's football. Hey, you can rebuild one program, bring it to the NFL and it's translatable. Or do you feel like there's still growing pains there given it's a college staff in a lot of ways?
I think there is obviously going to be growing pains, but at the same time, he did it at two completely different conferences, like Temple and the Big 12, or excuse me, the AAC and the Big 12 are, they play like different sports in some respects. Yeah. So I think it'll be fine as far as the Panthers are concerned. I do think it'll take a couple of years, but I am pretty confident that he will be a decent coach, whether he takes him to the next level remains to be seen, but that's just my opinion.
Well, he's getting a lot of leeway with a contract and a nice coin. He's the sixth highest paid coach in the NFL right now. And, you know, that's none of my business. I think it's fantastic. He seems like a great guy with a great family. Cash in, do what you can. But I hope for his sake that he leans on what he learned from places like the New York Giants. He spent 1 year there. He's built some good NFL connections. And I've read a lot about, you know, some of the people that he's been closely tied to from those days. And another thing I like is along his journey, he's coached almost every position group. So that tells me he's a guy that on a very young defense and also some parts on offense who can get in there and, you know, be a little more involved maybe than like a Ron Rivera, maybe like a George Seifert, guys like that who are a little more hands off. Reminds me a little bit of John Fox. Maybe it's the gray hair, but he seems to have a little bit of that, edge to him. And I'm not saying that matters because a lot of fans want their coaches to chew gum and yell in the sidelines. And I thought Ron did a fine job by being stoic, but I think a new coach was definitely in order. I don't know if Matt's my guy, but I top three or four on my list. I was surprised that they threw that much money at him, but again, he's got the money to spend, so ain't my problem. Billy Marshall, John Ellis, this is The Roar on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We're going to wrap things up here. A good time. Billy, want to get your thoughts on just one more quick thing here. Going into this draft, you know, we talked about, you know, Derrick Brown, you know, whether he was the guy at seven, the value in the combine sort of, you know, diminished his value somewhat. Where do you stand? I'm going to leave you with this, give you the last word, on the defensive side of this draft, which was the entire draft. Give me a couple players that stand out as maybe year one contributors for other than Brown.
Yeah, I think I made my point pretty clear on Derrick Brown and the value he brings seventh overall. But like I said, I don't think he's going to be a bad player. I think he'll be like Star Lotulelei 5 years with the team, and who knows what happens with the second contract. And that's sort of where I stand. Now, as far as the other players, I think the players who present a larger upside and who could really change the defense in the future are going to be Jeremy Chinn and Gross Matos.
Yeah.
I think both of those offer tremendous upside because they are fantastic athletes. They have a ton of different versatility, whether, you know, Gross Matos wants to play inside or outside. You know, Jeremy Chinn was near the line of scrimmage or deep and potentially in the slot. So, yeah, I think those two guys are kind of really going to determine the fate of how the defense kind of transitions over the next few years.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about Phil Snow next episode. I want to dive into, you know, some real good nuts and bolts stuff with you about, you know, the systems he's run at Baylor. I've done a little homework. I've seen some of his concepts. So they ran some cover one a lot at Temple, a lot of the 43 under stuff. But I want to get your perspective next episode on, you know, how of attacking style they might have versus a read and react and much more. Billy, this has been great, man. Appreciate you joining up with us, guys. We're going to do this again, I guess, next week. This will air a couple of days after we record it. We're right here on the cusp of the Cam Newton announcement. But you can hit me up at One Panther Place on Twitter. Of course, Blue Wire Pods on Twitter. You can hit Billy. What's your handle again? Billy?
Yeah, you can follow me. Billy M underscore 91.
Billy M underscore 91. He's got the Simba with the Panthers head, right? Can't miss him. I can't miss him. Guys, we appreciate it. We have some guests lined up, some exciting guests around the NFL, some former Panthers. We're going to be bringing that to you here very soon. Again, it's Blue Wire Podcast, The Roar. I'm John. He's Billy. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.